We all want a business like Netflix or Amazon Prime. Businesses where once a customer engages with them, it becomes automatic and a part of their lifestyle from then on. But how do you build that forever transaction? I'm Robbie Kelman Baxter, and I have been studying subscription and membership models for nearly 20 years. In this podcast, my guests and I share the secrets and strategies of the membership economy. Join us for Subscription Stories, True Tales from the Trenches. When I wrote The Membership Economy, I knew that nearly every organization could build trusted recurring revenue relationships with their customers just by focusing on a forever promise. I really saw a huge future and hoped that companies would follow this path. What I didn't realize was just how quickly and broadly they would heed my words and invest in subscriptions. It can be hard to predict what will happen next, but in this episode, we're going to do just that. Today, my guest, Joe Vorlich, CEO of Recurly, and I will talk about trends for 2025. We'll explore what's ahead, both for digital natives and large companies just dipping their toe into the world of recurring revenue. You'll learn best practices of the most successful household names, as well as how to manage challenges relating to speed to market and scaling without losing your secret sauce. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Robbie. I am very glad to be here.
So tell me a little about the journey that led you to where you are today at Recurly.
So I was a Recurly customer. If I go back 9 or 10 years, I was working in a business where we were tasked with launching a new product line, and we had to take it to market really quickly. And we identified at the time, we found Recurly as a way in which we could get subscriptions up and running in a matter of days, not months. And that was a big deal to us. But that was 10 or 11 years ago, and Recurly was not the thing I woke up and thought about every single day until I got a call from a board member of the company about 18 months ago, who I had worked with previously. And he said, I'm working with this company. It's a really, really good company that can be an amazing company, and it's a great fit for you personally. And you need to learn something about it. And when I heard the name, I said, it is a great product. That's what I remember. So that got me intrigued. And here we are. I started at Recurly January 2nd of this year. So we're going on. By the time this airs, it'll be just over a year. And I'm so glad that I'm here.
Yeah, it's 2024. So we're at the end of 2024. We're recording this. And yeah, it's exciting to hear about what you guys are doing. But before we get into kind of what you're doing at Recurly, I understand that you, as part of your due diligence before you took this role, you talked to 50 subscription-based businesses about the challenges facing organizations that rely on recurring revenue. I'm really interested in what that was like, the 50 calls, or maybe there were more than that, and what you heard from these businesses. This would have been, I guess, in 2023 that you were doing these conversations.
Yeah, well, so I had calls with about our 50 largest merchants, largest customers, and I asked them all two questions, and then I kind of listened closely to the commentary that was said in between. The questions were really simple. The first one was, if you could assign a letter grade to Recurly today, what grade would that be? And the follow-on question was, if it's not an A, how do we get there? And to me, that was actually the most exciting. There's things that I heard in response got me really enthusiastic about where we are in the subscription industry. Our grades were pretty consistent and they were pretty good, to be honest, but getting an A is hard. And the thing that I heard over and over again about how to get an A was some form of, we as a subscription merchant are still in the early stages of figuring subscriptions out. And what we really are looking for is not just tools and capabilities, but is expertise. And expertise to help us see around the corner on what's coming next. And I kind of categorized the expertise that they were asking for into three areas. The first was what I call kind of charting the course. So these are like, where should we not reinvent the wheel? Because there are proven best practices for how to design bundles and offers to meet this use case or to price effectively or what have you. The second was about speed. So this was about how do we push the pace? How do we move faster with kind of keeping up with the trends that consumers are driving in the subscription industry? And the third was really about how do I anticipate and make decisions that are going to look smart 2, 3, 4 years from now in terms of how my business is going to scale. You know, I don't need to solve for global expansion today, but if I'm successful, that's going to become a big deal 3 years from now. So how do I think about that? Again, if I just take all three of those and sort of put them into one umbrella, I would say there's a lot of hunger for leadership and expertise.
So the three were charting the course. What are the best practices that have been defined? Speed to market. How do you get there more quickly? And dealing with the inevitable, or let's say hoped for, scaling challenges, right?
These are the luxury problems.
Yeah. And so I'd love it if you went through each of those and shared. Back then in 2023, you were learning what they needed to hear. I think now, hopefully you have some answers on those questions or some thoughts when you circle back and talk to these 50 largest accounts. What are some of the insights that you have on in each of those areas?
Yeah, so great point. I mean, I think the first piece around charting the course, I want to maybe share two examples because I think it helps to illustrate kind of how prevalent the need is for this kind of expertise. So when we think about subscription businesses, we oftentimes, at least in our language, we talk about sort of the subscription natives. So these are businesses that have been in the subscription business for a long time. It's core to their business model. And then subscription newbies. These are businesses that may be more transactional in the way they've run their business historically, but are interested in recurring revenue or subscription for a variety of reasons. So when it comes to the native, I'll give you sort of a tactical example, but that makes a big deal on the bottom line is one of the things we found when we looked across even the data of our customer base was that there's a ton of variety in how merchants are optimizing the timing and the language of their dunning campaigns with their consumers. And at the same time, if we look at the data on actual successful revenue collection from subscriptions, there clearly are best practices, particularly around the timing, at which point you communicate with your consumers when you've had essentially a non-renewal or a failed renewal transaction. And so what we found, we had a great example in 2023 with Kahoot, which if you have children, you know Kahoot because it's a great online learning platform used by most elementary schools globally. And we found that just by tweaking the timing to basically marry up the timing of their dunning with industry best practices, we could recover a substantial increase in revenue each month by doing that. So this is sort of a small configuration tweak just to take what they had kind of originally designed in a bespoke way and move it more in line with best practice that results in a growth in their bottom line. I see you have a question.
I do. I have a follow-on question. So when you implemented those best practices on timing of their dunning, are the things that you did intuitive? So like they made logical sense, like instead of doing it automatically at the close of business, do it in the morning? Or was it something like that? Or was it really unintuitive and highly technical?
I think when you look at the rationale, this is what we see on most of our best practices. They're all intuitive. And at the same time, we're trying to take sort of a data-led approach to this, which is that rather than simply following our intuition, we can look across, in our case, our network of data. So our network of subscriber behavior and merchant trends across our network and say, with statistical significance, in this case, which dunning windows are proving to be the most effective in terms of their yield of revenue back. But yes, I would say the answer is pretty intuitive.
What would be an example of that? You don't have to give super specifics, but just for color.
Yeah, I think if I recall correctly, I think for them originally, as with a lot of our merchants, they were set up several years ago in terms of the way they organized the dunning campaign. And it was essentially one outreach to the consumer a number of days after a failed transaction. And so what we did was kind of go back through and say, again, what is the kind of proven methodology when we look at the data of our customer base? And that involved them making a number of communications to the consumer on shorter durations of time there. And again, clearly yielded a better result for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I didn't mean to cut you off. I was sort of interested in that question because I always wonder is it something when you're telling your merchants what to do, are they saying, oh, of course, it makes sense to reach out more than once and do it more frequently and not wait so long? Or are they saying, wow, that's something we never thought of? And I understand that there's a lot of power in the...
I do think for most of our, at least my experience in this category, is that most of our merchants are deeply data-driven. And so they both want evidence. They're going to take a recommendation at face value. They'd like to see some evidence of that. But they also want to be able to go measure on their own. They want to be able to go to run an A/B test and to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is the right approach. And so I think maybe that's just part of kind of who we are operating in this space, is we want concrete proof. But that is something that we do see with our customers quite a bit. I was going to share with you that in addition to these native subscription companies like a Kahoot, we're also seeing new entrants in the subscription space. And in that case, I think there's an even bigger premium in some ways placed upon the best practices and the expertise. So an example that I like to use for that is we got into a conversation with Alaska Airlines about a year ago. And to me, this was surprising initially. So what is a subscription for an airline? And Alaska has a number of interesting kind of, I think, strategies, very progressive ideas around why this is important and why this works. But the reason, like the thing that was most important to them was not breadth of feature functionality and capability, but it was really, okay, how do we learn from the best subscription companies that have come before us around kind of meeting the consumer's needs? So, and I guess the maybe as I think about that and your question, your follow-on question around Kahoot, I think the common thing that we end up telling a lot of our merchants is we can give you best practices, but the best practices are going to evolve because subscriber behavior is evolving. And so what you really need is the ability to move in an agile way, basically with trying new things. So perhaps you start with a fixed price of $9.99 a month, but you need to be able to quickly test a ramping price. What happens when I start the consumer at $2.99 a month and ramp that up every month? And so really the ability to kind of quickly access those changes, which gets into my second point on speed to market, is a huge competitive advantage in our space right now.
Yeah. So speed to market, by that you mean I have a new idea. Maybe instead of charging $9.99 a month, I want to see what would happen if I charged $2.99 and then ramped it up. How long does it take me to be able to go from kind of sitting around the table with a brainstorm to designing a test and getting it to the market and getting the learning so that we can decide what to do?
That's exactly right. I mean, I think the extreme case of this is imagine that one of our competitors creates a new bundle, a new offer in the market, and we want to respond to that with a competitive offer of our own or a new bundle of our own. Are we able to do that in a matter of hours or days after making the business decision? Or is this a series of IT requests that are going to take us 10 to 12 weeks? And I think in the speed at which subscriptions are evolving, the latter is a huge competitive disadvantage. And so we talk about speed to market. It is really about the ability to not only bring a subscription program online quickly, but I think even more important, it's the ability to go evolve that program very, very quickly. And so one of the things, I guess, probably the most common thing we see when we are talking to a new potential customer is that the business has developed a series of its own kind of custom technology workflows and business process to support the subscription line of business. And that at some point, the subscription business grows to a place where every change they want to make requires another series of backlog tickets with engineering. And the growth leader, and this is a big change that we're seeing in terms of our own customers. We're seeing much more of the revenue growth leader in addition to the finance leader or the technology leader who was historically charged with managing billings and tax and so forth. And that growth leader is saying, again, I can't kind of wait in the queue because it's just too long. I need to be able to go in and make changes to my offers, to my coupons, to my pricing in real time.
There is a big change. Now, you've alluded a couple of times to how quickly the subscription world is changing. as specific as you can, what are some of the things that are changing that if you were at dinner with a friend and they said they were thinking of getting into subscriptions with their old line business, what are some of the things that you'd say to watch out for or things to say, these are coming around the pike?
I think the macro thing is about flexibility and customization, at least perceived flexibility and customization for the subscriber, so I can have it my way, in effect. A tactical example of that is how I want to pay for my subscription. We focus largely on consumer subscriptions or high velocity subscription businesses. The majority of those subscriptions are still paid for via a credit card or a debit card. The reality is that we're seeing consumers be sort of turned off when they don't have the availability of choosing to use their Apple Wallet or choosing to use Venmo or whatever. You can kind of fill in the blank on the alternative payment method. And that's a list of payment methods that's just growing really kind of every year. And so what we see is that there's a big premium on being able to go provide essentially the feeling of customizability for the subscriber. I think another example of that comes down to configuration of bundles. So offering kind of multiple ways into the subscription here, an annual subscription, monthly subscription, the ability to pause your subscription or restart your subscription. So really the sense of customization, personalization from the subscriber experience, I think is the sort of single biggest trend. And as a merchant, it can feel very hard to keep up with that, because it's kind of a moving target.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I struggle with when I think about subscriptions is I've always said that a big part of the reason that consumers like subscription is that they can relax into it. They know what they're paying every month. They know what they're getting, and they can almost set it and forget it, right? I know I'm going to want to get movies. I know that this new service has a way for me to get movies. I don't have any late fees. I don't have to remember what I have out. So it's easy for me. The more personalization you give somebody, the more flexibility you give them, the more they have to remember, the more they're in control, the more they have to be in the driver's seat. Now, if it's B2B, that's what a lot of B2B companies, they want, and people are paid to keep track of that stuff. But for consumers, I feel like there's sort of a trade-off between the more choice you give them, the more personalization you give them, maybe the less likely they are to treat it like a subscription. I'm going to turn it on this week because I'm on vacation. I'm going to turn it off. I'm going to turn it on this month because I'm watching this new series, and I'm going to turn it off. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think there's a bit of a... So look, I think there's probably two ways in which you can look at this. There's sort of the paradox of choice of like, keep it simple. And even if we think we want choice, we actually all prefer some level of simplicity. But I also do think that the sort of like the cat's out of the bag a little bit on consumers just developing a higher bar or more thoughtfulness about their subscriptions, about the value that they're getting from those subscriptions. Like, I mean, Robbie, the simplest version of it is when we talk to merchants, the conversation has just shifted dramatically from acquisition of subscribers to retention and lifetime value of subscribers. And I think that that's just reflection again of us as human beings or subscribers having a bit of scrutiny on that. And so what we are seeing, and it probably depends a little bit on the category of the industry, is that there is a lot of benefit. At the end of the day, if you're focused on lifetime value, there's a lot more benefit in retaining the subscriber, even if it is involving giving them the ability to pause or potentially reducing their price for a period of time. Like a sort of an example of this that we've heard a lot of our merchants talk about, probably less used today, but talk about would be, if we know that you have been essentially a low user for the last 2 months, is proactively coming to you with a price decrease to say, try to remind you, your favorite program comes back on air in March of next year. We know you're going to want to see the new season of that. But until then, we have these things to go offer you, but we're also going to go ahead and give you a promotional reduction for the next 4 months. So we're hearing a lot more of our merchants kind of wanting to experiment with different levers to, again, offer a bit of personalization. But really, I do think the business objective is to focus on lifetime value over kind of acquisition numbers or subscriber numbers.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I have like a million questions and I love this idea. It is tricky because you want, I always say it should feel simple and intuitive to the consumer, but to be able to do that, there has to be a lot of flexibility on the platform to allow that. But there's sort of also a difference between I'm going to threaten or I'm going to outmaneuver the subscription, that versus someone saying, wait, they've bundled together all this stuff that I don't need. And all I really want is this one thing. And they're making me pay as if I'm getting the full value. So this idea of saying, if we're recognizing, for example, that they only watch, let's say, a seasonal sports, right? Which is something that I've done a lot of work with the NBA and other sports leagues. That's a real issue. Like, why should I pay in the off season? But at the same time, you want them to stay committed. And let's say that if you know that the content is not as interesting to them in a certain season, or that they're especially busy, or you notice that they're not using it that much, and recognizing that and saying, hey, you're not using it that much, we've automatically downgraded you and we'll upgrade you back again in the season or what have you. I think if that's done in an elegant way, that can really feel like you see them and you're looking out for them. You mentioned at the beginning this concept of seeing around corners for your clients. I think a big value of good subscriptions is they see around corners for their subscribers, right? They say, instead of having to transact all the time and be aware and keep your wits about you and say, oh, there's a new movie, I'm going to pay the $14 to get it, to say, hey, we're going to have the movies that you want to watch and we're going to charge you a fair price so that you can manage your budget. I think that's what people want from their subscriptions, and that's what drives trustworthiness, which ultimately, hopefully, leads to retention and lifetime value.
Right. I agree with you completely.
So we were talking about speed to market. The third one that you mentioned as these kind of three big trends that Recurly merchants were asking you for is scaling. And I assume that's just scaling up, but also scaling globally and maybe even incorporating new programming. Can you talk a little bit about what it is that you're seeing subscription-based, when subscriptions talk to you about scaling, what kind of scaling are they doing? And what are some of the challenges that they run into?
Yeah, I mean, so you kind of touched on it. So I think and especially when you start to then unpack it, so like, what might this business look like in 3 years, in 4 years, in 5 years? The dimensions are, to start with the simplest, which is today we measure our subscribers in the tens of thousands or the hundreds of thousands, but we think that we're going to start to measure them in the millions in the future. So how do our costs scale with that? How does our technology, the accessibility of what we offer, scale with that is important. Global is a huge one. How can we start to scale this more globally without kind of having to stand up bespoke operations for every country and also remain in compliance globally is a very big one there. I touched on the sort of the proliferation of payment methods. This is something that becomes exponentially more complex as you do scale globally, just localized preferences in terms of payment methods. So I think that what we're seeing is that, like, subscription merchant, when they're kind of evaluating, how do I make the right series of decisions in terms of investment behind, even if it's standing up a brand new subscription program, they're thinking pretty far out. Like, they're sort of imagining, okay, is this something that if we have success is going to, I can scale for the next 3 to 5 years? Or are we going to have to press pause at some point and go through sort of the painful step of finding new solutions and migrating our customers or our subscribers to those behind the scenes? So I think this is a huge one. And we've had the really good fortune at Recurly of being through some incredible scaling stories with our merchants. We started as a almost fully self-serve business where subscription merchants would sign up and begin to offer subscriptions. And so we've had the pleasure to work with somebody like Justin TV, which was Justin in his garage streaming video games, which went on to become Twitch, which is the global leader. And so I think we try to learn from some of those experiences on watching businesses go through that incredible scale to then kind of go help a merchant slow down and ask the next questions they need to be thinking about now.
What were some of the questions that came up for Justin/Twitch in that growth phase? That's fascinating.
I think it's happened so much. And just being totally candid, we're still growing with them. So we're still going through it all the time right now. And so it is, a lot of it, as I said, is about how to open up in new markets from both from a currency perspective, from a payment type perspective, from a tax and compliance perspective. Some of it is about literal scalability of their platform. Like another customer who we've scaled with a lot and had some incredible experiences with is Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus is one of the largest streamers of the Super Bowl every year. And so we had the pleasure of onboarding literally millions of subscribers in a day with them. That's a difficult thing to go do. And so those are kind of the questions we sit around the table with those sorts of customers quite often, talking about what are the biggest peaks going to be? How do we ensure that we've tested, we're ready to go, and you are ready to go scale to serve those? So those are the kind of questions, as I said. I think the exciting part to me about this industry is that even the largest names that we can think of, they're still, I mean, we're sitting here, we happen to be sitting here as we're recording this in the middle of November, 3 days after Netflix streamed the Mike Tyson-Jake Paul fight. And for a lot of people, it was a challenging experience because it didn't really stream. It was tons of buffering challenges. And Netflix is one of the best at what they do. But I think it just sort of illustrates the point that we're all still learning about the continual scaling challenges. And for us, like, we do learn about it with our customers as we kind of plan for what's coming next in their businesses.
So you mentioned that you divide your subscription businesses into two categories, natives and newbies.
Yes.
What are some of the things that they can teach each other?
Oh my gosh. I think this is such a good question. There's so much in here. So the newbies are super hungry for if you could dial back the clock to 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and tell your first year in the subscription business self what you know now, what would it be? They're deeply hungry for that playbook. But I'll give you what I think is a really interesting sort of side of it, which is the other end. So a lot of these newbies, if you start to really ask the questions, why subscriptions? I mean, yes, recurring revenue is attractive. Like any CEO or CFO would gladly take more recurring revenue. But we work with, I'll give you a good example, I think, is we work with a brand called Citizen M Hotels. They're a fast-growing hotel chain out of the Netherlands. And they launched a subscription program with us. And the primary goal is not revenue there. They do generate revenue. But it's really to sort of flip on its side the idea of loyalty programs. So rather than the traditional loyalty program being, I need to spend more and more and more money with your hotel or with your airline in order to then earn points, in order to then be able to redeem those points, they're saying, what if we simplified this dramatically and we told our guests, for a low subscription price, we can transparently guarantee you the following benefits? And they're finding that it's performing well. And it's, again, the thing they're really focused on is loyalty and trust with their consumers. So I think for a lot of the natives, it's worth, and I run a subscription business too. Recurly is our customers are on subscriptions. I have to sometimes come back to the basics, which is like we are in the lifetime value. This is an annuity lifetime value business. It's the number one thing we're trying to do is build long-term trust with our customers. And I think that's something that a lot of the newbies are thinking about, maybe more so than revenue, because they've already got really healthy revenue streams. And I think the natives are kind of, we have conferences with our customers, they're getting excited about those ideas.
I did some work with Citizen M too. And
oh, cool.
They really are there. Yeah, it's great. And what they know during COVID, they had some really interesting subscription experiments, like a membership where you could have unlimited stays for a fixed price. I think it was about $1,500. That's a bold and interesting choice. And I think there's a lot of companies out there in hospitality, healthcare, automotive, and others that are just starting to think about what could a subscription be for us? That's a fascinating question. And they scale really fast because they already have all the customers, right? And now they're just putting out, like, for them, subscription is just a new product or a new way to interact with them.
Absolutely.
They're kind of a startup.
Yeah, they are startups, and they require, like, usually we see as they require great champions within those organizations who are really entrepreneurial. I mean, we're working with a restaurant chain right now, which I can't share the name of yet, but it's, I never would have thought And this is it's a unlimited pizza subscription for them. And so it is really exciting to watch. You know, we think when we study the market, subscription merchants, the best data that we can see says that the subscription economy is really going to have very healthy growth, at least through the next 5 to 6 years, going to have very healthy growth. And there is growth in the existing industries, things like media and streaming, telecom, but a lot of the growth is being driven out of these new categories, moving online.
What are the categories that you think are most interesting in terms of what they're doing in subscription right now?
I mean, we touched on travel. I personally, maybe because I'm a travel nerd, I think this one is incredibly interesting. So we're seeing airlines, hotel chains start to experiment in a meaningful way with subscriptions. Retail and e-commerce is certainly probably deeper in the experimentation kind of cycle. But I think there's a very, very kind of very bright future with that. And that's my background. I have a lot of background in retail and e-commerce space. Healthcare is probably the thing that in a good way caught us totally off guard over the last year. So we weren't focused on it. We just kind of a big pipeline of brands, either again, mostly existing known brands in and around the health and wellness space who are interested in subscription models. And financial services and financial literacy is another big one that we're seeing. So we launched the brand NerdWallet, which is a great digital brand. We launched their first subscription program this past year. I mean, and I think there's ones that I'm not thinking about and that none of us are thinking about that are going to surprise us over the course of the next year as well. We're seeing more from, you mentioned organizations like the NBA. But we're seeing more interest from the sports franchise, the teams themselves globally. Like, I'm so excited about all the diversity of new categories moving to subscription.
Yeah, it's really interesting. One that you didn't mention, but that I think about a lot and have been just starting to do more work with is automotive. And there's so many different ways that they can do subscription, right? You can subscribe to the car so you don't have to have the burden of ownership, right? You can subscribe to the interior of the car. Right, which I think that's the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one that seems to be getting traction right now, this idea that your environment, for those of us who find ourselves working in the car sometimes, right, having great Wi-Fi and being able to connect to your Zoom calls or your Teams calls or whatever, that's becoming something that people are really willing to pay for. And then autonomous driving as a service. But it is, like you said, it's hard to know which ones are going to become the thing we all do and which ones are going to sort of remain novelties, edge cases.
Do you have a perspective on, is there sort of like a tipping point in terms of each of our wallets, like what we spend each month, where like, is there a waterline where subscription versus one-time purchases kind of balances out for us? I mean, I look at my own behavior, which is a bad study, but it's a study of one. And I know that every year, my percentage of dollars going towards recurring is increasing. And it makes sense when we look at all the data that we have kind of looked at over the past year on recurring says that it is growing faster than the rest of the economy. So that makes sense. I'm always curious sort of where is the watermark? Like, where does it find equilibrium?
Yeah, I think that remains to be seen. And I also think it's different by generations.
Right.
I think there's a lot of, I'm in my 50s, we have owned a home for 25 years. We own our cars. We drive them into the ground. We drive them a long time and then we give them to our kids, honestly.
I'm feeling old now. Yeah, right. I might not be the best proxy for this.
Well, I mean, we're one segment or we're certain segments, but I see my kids who are young adults not really that excited about ownership and really appreciating the benefits of access, the flexibility it gives them, the variety it gives them. And also, they have the possibility to have that flexibility that wasn't an option for me, right? The ways of, for example, the Citizen M, that subscription, which I don't think they offer anymore, but this idea that you could be a global citizen, a nomad, digital nomad, and work remotely. They rent their clothes, they rent their furniture, or they subscribe.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah. I mean, so subscribing to clothes, subscribing to furniture, having Uber One or one of the sort of subscription-based upgrades to car ride sharing and the like. I mean, those are some really big expenses that we all have. And if you're not owning and you're accessing that tipping point, I think it's very different what they're willing to do versus what I'm comfortable with. And I think a lot for subscription businesses, you want to reach your new customers at a moment when they're making the decision about how they're going to get that particular benefit. If you're a young adult and you've just graduated from school and are starting your first job where you have to wear professional clothes and you find a subscription clothing rental business, that might be how you dress for the rest of your career, the habit you form. So as people are forming new habits with whatever it is, whether it's buying a home, starting your career, having children, thinking about vacations, thinking about transportation, thinking about your healthcare, I think that people new to those markets are looking at it very differently.
I totally buy that premise. And I'll give you one little anecdote to support it. So we were speaking this morning with Nuuly, which is a great apparel subscription brand owned by Urban Outfitters.
We all subscribe to it here.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we've worked with them since their onset, really. And we were telling them, we said one of my colleagues has a daughter who's a senior in college right now, and she was just visiting her 2 weeks ago. She took pictures, showed us. She had her and all of her friends all had Nuuly boxes all over the place. And kind of to your point, Nuuly was telling us this is true, that college is a huge growth segment for them, that's become the norm, right? Don't need to go shopping for new every month when I can get new and recycle it back. And so I think you're right. I think part of the future growth is that my takeaway is maybe we are underestimating actually the future growth of subscriptions when you think about how that consumer behavior is changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And the alignment of, I think it's always about aligning what your goals are with what's the most efficient way to achieve those goals. And payment systems really can allow you to better align the value you're getting with what you're paying. So I think it's only going to get more complicated for the vendor, more complicated for the merchant, in order to provide greater flexibility for the consumer.
For sure.
So I have like a lot more questions for you, but I will save them for another day, if that's okay. I hope you'll come back. Before I let you go, I'd love to do a speed round with you.
Oh yeah, let's do it.
Okay. First subscription you ever had?
First subscription I ever had was the Dodgers, Los Angeles Dodgers fan club.
Your favorite subscription that you use today for personal?
I'm really on this baseball theme. I love MLB. I love my MLB subscription.
Awesome. The most beautiful college campus you visited while at Top Hat?
It's Top Hat. We served universities. The factual answer is that the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, my alma mater, is the most beautiful. But my favorite, just stating the fact, but my favorite visit is probably Corvallis, Oregon, Oregon State University.
Yeah, beautiful place. And the best piece of advice you have for a non-technical CEO coming into an engineering-driven company?
Curiosity cures all ills. I think bringing a cure in an engineering-centric company, we can tend to fall in love with our solutions and our products and our complexity. At the end of the day, engineers get super excited about solving interesting problems, though, for the customer. And so bringing a curiosity for really understanding the customer and then being a translation device to help translate what you're hearing from the customer. I talked about my 50 interviews at the beginning back to an engineering culture. Like, incredible things can happen from that.
Fantastic. Joe Ehrlich, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Subscription Stories.
It's been great being here. Thank you, Robbie.
That was Joe Ehrlich, CEO of Recurly. For more about Recurly, go to recurly.com. And for more about Subscription Stories, as well as a transcript of my conversation with Joe, go to robbiekelmanbaxter.com/podcast. Also, I have a favor to ask. If you like what you heard, please take a minute to go over to Apple Podcasts or Apple iTunes and leave a review. Mention Joe and this episode if you especially enjoyed it. Reviews are how listeners find our podcast, and we appreciate every one. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening to Subscription Stories.